Hello, boils and ghouls, boys and girls, and welcome to Horny for Horror. This is a podcast dedicated to the greatest genre of all time. We got interviews, reviews, ghost stories, spooky debates, and so much more. Everything that you horror heads, or just fans of a good time, I guess, would want to hear. Now, normally this podcast is hosted by the talented Betsy, the heartthrob Mono, and the just okay me. But this week's a little bit different because of the holiday. That's Thanksgiving if you're not a red-blooded American or just don't have a calendar. This week, Betsy had to fly out early to get to her family, while Mono and I, orphans that no one wanted, would stay at home like we do every year. Well, this year we're all set to share our one slice of bread and single cranberry, but the phone rang. We picked it up together, held it to our little ears, and the voice on the other end of the phone invited us into his study for a Thanksgiving chat around a warm Los Angeles fire. Naturally, we took advantage of the situation, threw a recorder into the middle of the room, and the following interview took place. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here is our special Thanksgiving episode. We are so thankful to all our Horrorhead listeners and to any of you who might be joining us for the first time. Recording this episode was the greatest honor of my life, and I'm happy to share it with y'all. So sit back and relax, unless you're driving, sit up. And enjoy.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
I am so excited for this episode. I am flabbergasted that we are in the presence of one of my favorite actors in the whole world.
Most iconic characters of all time.
Yeah.
Let's run the list. You've got Pennywise the Clown.
Mm-hmm.
You've got...
Wadsworth.
Wadsworth.
He's high up there for me.
High up there. And I would say the greatest character ever put to film, Dr. Frankenfurter from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. We have Mr. Tim Curry joining us today.
Mr. Tim Curry, hello.
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 It's quite an honor for us to get to talk to you. Thank you for giving us any amount of
the honor
time.
Is mine.
Yeah. Oh, you are so
too
kind.
Too kind. So this is, we've got to say it, it's your first podcast ever.
It is. It's the very first.
Bam, we got Tim Curry.
The bug might bite you and you could start your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now you can add this to your IMDb. Did you know that you have 229 credits on IMDb?
Really?
You have 229 acting credits.
Well, I do work my ass off if I get the opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so many cool things like happened at the same time. Like you were The Darkness and Legend the same year that you were Wadsworth and Clue, which are two night and day roles, I guess pun intended, with The Darkness. But what was that like being in a movie like Legend and Clue at the same time?
It was sort of odd because Wadsworth in Clue never shuts up. So it was hell trying to learn it.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Yeah, because all the lines are so verbose and so long. That's
they
really
are.
Interesting. Yeah.
He likes to hear the sound of his voice.
Was Clue rehearsed like a play?
It was a bit, yes. Well, Johnny Lynn, who directed it, I was in high school with a sort of boarding school in the west of England. So I knew him quite well.
That's so cool. And this comes from one of our other fellow podcasters, Betsy, wanted to know, did you have a favorite memory from the filming of Clue?
I loved Eileen Brennan, who played Mrs. Peacock.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
She made me laugh like a drain.
Did you guys ruin a lot of takes with breaking?
I did.
So we are a horror podcast, and you've obviously done a lot of spooky stuff. Growing up, were you into horror at all? Horror stories, horror movies?
I remember being very excited going to see Psycho.
It's one of the best.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved horror movies.
Do you have a favorite?
Well, that would certainly be one.
You probably don't watch a ton of horror movies. I don't know. What thing in horror movies, device or motif, like what scares you? Is it ghosts? Is it like demonic stuff? Or is it maybe just human psychology?
I think it's psychology.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense based with how you kind of approach acting and stuff, that would be what interests you.
You have a degree in both English and drama?
I do.
I do as well. So you and I are basically the same person. Same on every level.
Where did you do yours?
Oh, I did it at the prestigious school California State University of Bakersfield.
Oh, yes.
So I'm sure we got the same theater training, the same level of expertise out of that.
I didn't get much acting training. It was sort of academic, really.
Uh-huh. Okay. What for you, like, as an actor starting out then, if it wasn't through school, where do you feel you got, like, you learned how to do what you do well?
Just by doing it, really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's another way.
Yeah. When was the moment that you knew you were funny? You know, because clearly you've been doing it a long time. You've done dramatic stuff and comedic stuff. But when you were young, when was that moment where you were like, I think I'm funny?
I honestly don't remember, although I did know that I was.
Yeah, we feel like class. Growing up, going to school, it's like being like the funny one and knowing that's a way you could get attention.
Right.
So when did you first become interested?
It got me out of a lot of deep shit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's how it often is. I hear you. I think I was funny. For me, I was purely discovered what made me funny as a defense mechanism.
Yeah. I was teased a lot, so it was a way to get around that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny because you seem like such a leading man. It's funny to think that you were ever on the other side of it, you know? But I guess that's what brings us here to want to do this kind of expression. I was going to ask, when you were coming up, you were doing a ton of theater. Was Rocky Horror Picture Show the first big movie? Like, when you were doing it as a play, was that the first huge
job? It was the first movie.
Yeah. When you went from doing it in theater in London. Was it in London?
Yeah.
Yes.
And here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
London, LA, and then the movie.
Did you know it was going to be huge, or did you think it was going to just go by the wayside?
I remember reading it and thinking, if we can make this work, it's going to be really big. I guess we made it work.
Yeah.
You pulled it off. Mono has notes, but most of us feel you pull it off.
I have a few things I would change.
So what were there any major differences between the original play version and what you ended up filming?
No, not really.
Yeah.
Almost none.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
When you were adapting the character of Dr. Frank, you went through changes. Like, how long did it take you to figure out this is the version that I need to play?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when we started rehearsing, I was playing him as German. Do you have any tattoos, bread?
I love that. So, when you first started playing Frankenfurter, I mean, it was many years ago when we had such a limited view of gender expression.
Yeah.
Did you know you were ruffling feathers? Did you care? Did you want to ruffle feathers?
Well, one of the things that made it a hit, I think, was that all of that was in the air. I mean, it was the time of David Bowie and I guess the beginning of Freddie Mercury, and it was definitely part of the zeitgeist.
Yeah, that's interesting to think. I've never thought of it that way, that they were like kind of, maybe it was in the culture, it was happening in that moment. Did you ever feel like, when you were playing Frankenfurter, did you discover anything about yourself diving into that character? Or was it always very separate for you? You were like, I know how to become.
Well, I got away with murder, so that was fun.
Very literally, yes, I love that.
Do you have a preference between stage and film? Was there something that you enjoyed more?
I prefer film, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I did a play last summer at a rather sort of prestigious festival on the south coast of England, a revival of a Tom Stoppard play, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. And it was so long since I'd done a play, I had a sort of brain fart. I couldn't remember a single word.
Oh, no.
And in fact, they fired me.
Oh, no. You?
Well, first of all, they did this thing, which is the way I'm told Johnny Depp works. I had earbuds and somebody was up in this in the sound booth reading my lines to me before I had to say them.
Okay.
I found that very difficult. But they insisted that I try it. That
really
was a
hard
death knell.
For sure.
I can't imagine it, because I've heard a lot of actors are doing that now. I've also heard that, like, Robert Downey Jr. does it as well.
Really?
I can't imagine as an actor, because you want to hear what someone's saying to you in a scene.
Absolutely.
And react to it. Oh, my God.
It makes it very hard to be present.
It's just purely artificial at that point, of just, like a parroting your lines versus feeling them, because you're just saying what someone's saying in your ear.
Yeah.
What an interesting thing.
I have a question based on, like, you've done so many projects, and you're classically trained. How much do you like to improvise in your work, or how much do you...
Very little.
Okay, great. Great. And why did you find...
Mostly because I'm so bad at it.
I have a hard time believing that, but you...
No,
prefer,
really.
Really.
Believe it.
That's a mark of a good actor. He makes it look like it's improvised.
Yeah, because there's so many moments that I felt like they came from your brain, but maybe that's because you know how to make it feel real.
I hope so.
So all of the Pennywise moments were all scripted and nothing of that was you?
I didn't ever say anything that wasn't scripted.
Yeah, you have really cool advice. Like, I remember you on some interview, you were giving actors advice of just showing up. Can you expound on that at all? Obviously, I have a strong idea of what I think you meant.
Well, so much of it is finding in yourself what it is that you're playing. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably what I meant.
Yeah.
By showing up, because it is kind of important to show up.
It does help the film.
There's always going to be somebody who'll be happy to play your part.
Definitely.
That's true.
So we talked about kind of working into figuring out who Frankenfurter was. How did you do that with Pennywise? What was your approach to... Had you read the book?
I hadn't read the book. My favorite part of that was when I was down in the sewer and Georgie, the little boy, had sailed his paper boat down the drain, and we talked to each other, and I said something like, you know, why didn't you come down here? Down here, we float. And this little voice said, Mr. Curry, you're scaring me.
Oh, no, he ruined that take.
I said, well, gee, I'm sorry, but it's what I'm supposed to do.
I showed up here to scare you. That's why I'm here.
That's so funny.
It was directed by Tommy Lee Wallace, who directed Halloween 3, by the way.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
He's a good guy. I liked him a lot.
Was that a fun... This is a weird question. Was it a fun set? Was it fun making it?
It was, actually.
Yeah, did you find yourself behaving like... I guess this is a question for any actor, but how did playing Pennywise affect your day-to-day life? Or were you able to isolate it to, I'm on set, I'm Pennywise?
No, I was able to do that.
Yeah,
it makes sense. That's the fun of it, really, to arrive as one person and emerge as somebody else.
Yeah.
The prosthetic makeup wasn't particularly fun, but it never is.
No.
Yeah, you had to wear so much prosthetic for darkness and light.
Yeah, well, that was a very long job.
Oh.
The first time they did it, it took 10.5 hours.
Good Lord. That's insane. And you said they, they would pour a solvent?
Yeah, they used to rip a hole in the top of my head and pour in a bottle of solvent and smush it around.
That's crazy.
It is crazy, but it was efficient.
That's so fun. I love that character too. I don't know if we're done, we could talk about Pennywise forever.
Yeah.
But when you played Darkness, the prince, you played him so smooth. He was such a smooth operator. And obviously that role is inspired by so many different takes on what it means to be a prince of darkness or the prince.
Well, it's cool to be evil.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to play that cool villain.
Yeah.
And he is easily the coolest thing about that movie.
Well, gee, thanks.
Yeah. You one time said that villains are better written.
They are.
Yeah.
I think writers have far more fun writing a villain than they do anybody else.
It's true. There's more dimensions to
and
play.
And heroes are always so dull. Tom Cruise, I rest my case.
Oh my God, this is so awesome.
Agreed. I wanted to ask if you were aware that the picture of you on set from It as Pennywise in full makeup smoking a cigarette is very popular on the internet.
Is it? I love that picture.
It's such a good
It was
photo.
Entertainment Weekly.
Okay.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it was raining, and I think someone was holding an umbrella over me.
Yeah.
And I had a Marlboro dangling from my face, as per usual.
I love it. There's so many many great, like, iconic photos of you smoking. And you, if any kid sees it, they're going to want to smoke because you look cool as hell at every one of them.
Well, my friends say that, that I make them want to smoke. And I say, well, it's just called style.
In one interview, you talked about the ending of it. And you kind of talked about how, like, it didn't quite do it for you.
It didn't.
No. It didn't live up to the scares that were earlier in the film.
No.
What do you think could have been more impactful for the ending if you had to think of something?
The problem with the ending was that they constructed this enormous spider, which wasn't scary at all. I forget how they did it in the new one, but they did it better, I know.
Yeah, it's what you're saying is like Psycho's fantastic. Psychological scares are the best, and that whole film is about psychological torture, and then they just made it physical. And it's just a big, bulky thing that could be punched, which kind of takes all the fear out of that story, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You saw the new It, and I did.
I couldn't resist.
Of course not. I really loved it because it felt so different from yours. What did you enjoy about it, if you did?
I enjoyed the guy who played it. I thought he did it very well. I think the thing that works in Tommy's version is that you get a sense of the community that the kids come from, so you can see how skewed their world becomes.
I agree completely. I think that was, if I had to have a critique, I really enjoyed the new one, but if I had a critique, it would be that they lost that world, the Derry, not seeing
exactly
how their parents react to them is very sad, and they're all alone with this thing that no one will face.
Pennywise knows every single one of their fears and embodies them whenever.
This might be a strange question, but I'm curious what your opinion is. Do you think Pennywise is evil or insane or something else?
I think he's a nut job.
I love that.
Really?
I very recently watched your Tales from the Crypt, Death of Some Salesman, where you play three characters, and it was wonderful.
I played a whole hillbilly family.
A whole hillbilly, murderous hillbilly family.
And you won an Emmy for that? You won some award. I was looking on your IMDb. That's really cool.
I know I was nominated for one, but I don't think I got it.
Oh, okay.
Thanks for bringing that up, Mono.
Sheesh.
Rub anything else in?
No, really.
It was so cool to see you play all three of those different characters with, like, clearly different personalities.
It was fun because I had to have a double in every scene. So when I was the mother, my stuntman was dressed in my costume and very uncomfortable. Very unhappy he was, but I guess the check cleared.
It's a really good episode, listeners. If you guys haven't seen it, it's got one of my favorite ending shots ever. It's a really cool episode. Yeah. I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's so good.
It plays to, like, you're so good at jumping back and forth between funny and terrifying. And I was reading about how, like, you went out for the Joker on the Batman animated series, and they said you were too scary for it.
No, that's not true.
Oh, we pointed out a hole in IMDb.
Mm-hmm. No, I was playing the Joker on the cartoon.
And you got bronchitis?
Well, when I started doing it, I had quit smoking. And of course, I started again. And I did get bronchitis. And I would ruin takes by coughing. That was another good gig that I was fired from.
Oh, no. Now I brought something bad up.
Adam.
Oh, no.
Look what you've done.
It doesn't matter, actually. I'm rather proud to have been sacked. It's a lot more interesting than not being.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
A good story to it.
It also, like, makes sense that you have such a rebel attitude in your characters. It makes sense that you have that in real life, too. I love that.
Yeah, I guess I do.
Yeah. Were you a troublemaker when you were very young? Or did you just, your creative side is where the rebel comes out?
I think it's the creative side.
Uh-huh.
Really. I don't think I was a troublemaker. I think I was amusing, but...
Sorry to jump around, but do you have a favorite song from Rocky Horror?
I'm a wild and an untamed thing I identified with.
Okay. Yeah, it's such an awesome project, and I can't even help but think how many people's minds you changed.
Yeah.
playing that role. I mean, even...
I hope so.
Yeah.
You really did. And to know, like, all the fan base where everyone dressing up in costume and coming and being a part of it and feeling so free and open. It's like, I remember the first time I saw it, I saw the play version of it first. It's like a small local production. And I loved how into it everyone was. It's like the responses from the audience to the stage. That started with your production, where the audience...
No, they didn't talk back in the play in London.
Okay.
Or here.
Oh, okay.
That started in New York with the movie. And it was quite strange because that's where the sort of cult thing really became very strong. And the odd thing was that I was living in the next street right behind the Waverly Cinema where it played.
Oh, boy. Oh, no. Were you constantly hounded?
No, I wasn't. I did actually show up to see it with a couple of friends, and the manageress of the cinema said, "You're not Tim Curry." So I showed her my passport, and she just sort of deflated like the Wicked Witch.
I love that. You should have just shown her your legs, and then she would have known.
Oh, that's so awesome. I can't even stress enough how influential that role was to me, and how many... Yeah, because, you know, I was a young, gay, confused kid who just didn't even know how to feel about it, and even some of my own my internal homophobia was... I was battling with this image of Dr. Frankenfurter, and it actually made me confront a lot of my attitudes on gender and my limited view of that sort of thing. So it's...
Did you know you were gay?
No. I was in a deep, deep fudgy denial at the time. So I was just...
What a great phrase.
So I was just like, no, that's weird. And then as I matured in maybe like middle school, high school, and I began to understand, why was I pushing back so hard? I was like, oh, because that represents a deep part of me that wants to just express myself in a way that isn't just men are this way and women are this way. You have an immeasurable effect on young queer people of every walk of life.
I sure hope so.
Immeasurable, truly. Because that role has permeated into a lot of heteronormative culture as well, you know, you kind of... There's people out there who are having their minds changed, whether they like it or not, which I just always loved about it.
Going to see it live was like the first time I wore full makeup, mm-hmm, and a dress, and it was like, it was great. It was great seeing everyone do that.
Mm-hmm. Did you look good?
You better believe it.
I could see that.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You have a nice smug for drag.
I gotta try.
For sure.
Mono hosts a drag show.
I do, yeah. I do drag, and I do it with a beard, so I look busted. I don't look good, but I have fun doing it. Okay, I wanted to ask you about you have so many amazing projects I have to ask about. This is not so scary, but I know you get asked from time to time about Home Alone 2, and your experience on it is one of my favorite comedic roles ever. How did you develop that concierge character? Because it's such a specific take on a fussy man. I'm so curious, how did you develop that character?
Well, when I was living in New York, the first sort of 2 or 3 months, I lived at the Carlyle Hotel, which is one of the city's most expensive. And there was a guy behind the desk called Mr. Hector. And I used his name on my uniform in the movie.
Yes.
And he was very kind to me. And I think he was a little bit thrilled that I was staying there.
I bet. Can you imagine?
Yeah, that's so wild. So you kind of were channeling him.
A bit, yes. People who are kind of a bit servile are interesting.
At this point, I want to let listeners know Mr. Curry is lit up and it's cool as hell.
It's so cool.
We're all immediately smoking 5 cigarettes with him.
It is so cool.
There's a pack somewhere.
Here we go.
Wait till I bring out the dope.
Then the episode will really get started. Do you still smoke weed?
No.
No?
I was never very good at it.
Well, how did it affect you?
Well, I was in the London production of Hair.
Oh, boy.
Which was a sort of revolutionary hippie musical. And I didn't have a sober moment for about 18 months. And in the end, it just made me paranoid.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I quit.
I'm lucky. I get that.
I never had the paranoia. Mono, you get paranoid,
right? I get paranoid. Yeah. I used to, in college, just, I was just untouchable. And now I constantly am like, what are you thinking about me? Like, am I saying stupid things?
Magnifies your insecurity?
Totally.
Okay.
Totally. Do you have any more weed questions?
No. I have 100, but we'll do that.
I have a million.
On my Horny for Weed podcast.
Horny for Weed. Oh, no. I have to. This is a sour memory, but you did briefly meet Mr. Trump on the set of Home Alone 2.
I did, yes. Well, because we shot it at the Plaza, uh-huh. and he owned it, and his wife, Ivana, had redecorated it in what could only really be Czechoslovakian taste. The lobby had a beautiful terrazzo floor, which she covered with some hideous rug. And apparently when she'd finished and people were actually staying there, she used to knock on their door and say, "And how do you like your room?"
Oh my God!
What?
I would have let her have it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. But Donald was very much in the news at the time because he was divorcing her, mm-hmm. and had taken up with a, I guess she was a model, mm-hmm. stroke actress, Marla Maples.
Oh.
He was a sort of southern blonde. Mm-hmm. And they agreed to do a walkthrough in a scene. So there was much excitement about that. And they sort of strolled through this scene. I can't remember which one.
Yeah, I vaguely remember it's somewhere where Macaulay's character is just entering the hotel.
Yeah, sounds right. He was a trip.
Macaulay?
Yeah.
What was it like working with him?
Quite difficult because he basically just gabbled the lines. And the director, Christopher Columbus, if you can believe that name, would just get him to do it 3 or 4 times until he reckoned he had enough to cut around. And then we would do the scene again and he would do Mac's part from behind the camera. And that worked pretty well.
So you could actually have someone
react to him. I liked him. He was a nice kid. They gave him and his mother and father and sister, I think, a suite upstairs, sort of towards the top of the hotel. And he was up all night watching Nickelodeon or whatever. So he'd try and tell you all about it the next day.
Oh.
In the makeup chair. And I could not really have been less interested. But I liked him. He had a good heart.
That's awesome. And little did you know you would be heavily featured on many Nickelodeon cartoons.
No, I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah. I want to ask so many questions. I guess this seems like an organic time to ask you about voiceover. Yeah. You've done so much amazing, memorable voiceover roles, including the Wild Thornberries, obviously. What do you enjoy about voiceover? You know, obviously you said you maybe prefer film a bit more. What do you enjoy about voiceover?
Well, you can exaggerate, you know. I have a great friend called Charlie Adler who directs a lot of voice work, and he really taught me how to do it.
What did he help you with?
Yeah, we're trying to get his lessons for free here.
yeah, we want free lessons.
Well, I just used to watch him doing it. I always imagine a child watching, trying to keep them interested.
That's such a cool way to put it, of like, because kids need a lot of pretend to be engaged. So you're saying you bring that to voiceover. That's cool. So you didn't improvise in the voiceover booth at all?
Sure.
You did?
I did, yes.
Was it easier to improvise? Because I know just from listening to all these classic moments, a lot of fun, weird moments where you are Nigel and you are just making, you're just allowed to make weird noise after weird noise. I hear them and I'm like, he has to be improvising.
Or drunk.
Did they allow you to kind of play in that way?
Yeah, they did, actually.
Yeah.
That was Charlie actually directing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I made him laugh. But the fun thing in that cartoon was the relationship with my rather too sophisticated daughter, who I called Poppet. Or Poppety.
Yes.
And that was fun.
You did it for many years.
I did. Yeah. I miss it, actually.
Yeah.
It was fun to go in there 2 or 3 times a week and just have fun.
I need to get dressed. No prosthetics.
No prosthetics, no.
They didn't still put them on you anyway, just to mess with you?
No, they didn't. It wouldn't have survived very long.
I love those memories so much. And I mean, that's once again another project that you can't even imagine how many people grew up on that, loving it. And it's still a huge part of what makes them tick as little creative types.
Yeah, again, just like thanking you is like, again, all the film and TV you've done were such parts of us growing up and so important to us in so many different ways. Just to be able to have the opportunity to say that to you is very important.
That's awesome. So nice of you. Thank you.
I'm going to bring up a very silly role.
Okay.
I have to bring up a movie.
I've done a few.
A role that's very near and dear to our hearts, to my heart and Betsy's heart, who couldn't be here today, is a role you played in Scary Movie 2, where you played, what's that professor's name?
Oldman.
Okay. So funny. There's so much, and you really show your range in that movie, because, you know, there's huge moments, there's small moments. One of our favorite moments of comedy is when David Cross's character extends his coffee cup to you, and you very gently pass by and subtly ignore him and just say, "Excuse me." Was that scripted?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. So you made that up, it sounds like.
I enjoyed working with him, so I probably took a liberty around that.
That's so awesome, because that's a part.
Not moment. That he didn't.
yeah. I love that. Yeah, is there any other memories that come up from working with David Cross or in that movie that were either fun or strange or other?
Tori Spelling was interesting. Mm-hmm. I actually got to like her a lot. She got the joke, you know?
Uh-huh.
Oh, great.
There's so many moments in that. I can't even tell you. That little moment that probably was like just an off-the-cuff joke is a part we rewind and watch over and over again. And it's such a tiny moment in a movie that's filled with huge pratfallish jokes that might be my favorite comedic moment in that whole movie. So that's really cool to hear that you just made it up in the moment.
How did they come to you?
Well, originally Jeffrey Tambor was playing it, and I think he hadn't realized that he was required to play one scene in his underwear and sort of balked at that. Right. So they came to me.
They know.
Because God knows
up.
I was used to underwear.
Showed up on set in just your underwear, camera ready.
No.
I love that. What advice would you give to people who are young and creative and don't know how to express themselves yet?
Try a lot of different things, I guess.
That's really good advice. I mean, you have to just try everything and like kind of figure out what works for you.
What feels right.
Yeah.
Did you always know you were going to be an actor, or was there something?
Yes, I did. I always knew I wanted to be. Whether I would be, I didn't know.
What do you think you would be if you weren't an actor?
A bum.
That's perfect.
Perfect. Perfect response. I feel like a lot of us creatives would be that way, where it's like, if it doesn't work out, we're going to be the guy in front of Starbucks with seven cups.
Yeah, totally. But that's so cool, because like, you knew it was make or break. You were like, I want to do this one thing and it's got to work because I want it to work.
Exactly.
So did you obviously were doing productions in London for many years. Are you from London originally?
No, I'm from the far southwest of England, from Plymouth, where the Mayflower sailed from.
Cool. Do you ever see yourself visiting? Do you like to visit, or do you prefer it?
I do.
Yeah.
I like it. It's sort of sheep country.
Do they commemorate you there in Plymouth? Do they have like...
No, God, no.
Didn't know if they had a library.
I don't know that they're very proud.
Oh, no.
That's insane.
Yeah.
How could that be?
It's mystifying to me.
Well, we're going to change that with this podcast.
Absolutely.
I say we start a petition.
Yeah.
We're getting you a bust and a plaque in your hometown.
Yes.
If anything we accomplish with this podcast. A full statue.
I want a full statue.
What do you want your statue to be of?
Well, not Mr. Furta.
Okay. So I guess we'll go with your second choice, Professor Oldman from Scary Movie 2.
I don't mind, really. Seems profoundly silly to me.
Yeah. I love it.
Do you watch horror films regularly?
No, not really. I mean, I do like to go see them.
Okay. Do you remember the last horror movie you saw?
It, I suppose.
It, probably, yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it true that you were asked to be involved in the new one?
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
That's I don't know what I could have played, really.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Alvin, I have just a general question. What role do you feel you never got a chance to play, if any?
Yeah.
Because you clearly have
so many
229 credits on IMDb.
I remember when I went back to England after working here on Rocky, the National Theatre felt that I should work there, and one of their directors took me out to dinner and said, "I'd like you to play Hamlet," and I said, "I bet you say that to all the boys." And I think he probably did.
Do you feel you have a motto that you either live your life by or would like to think you live your life by?
Get up and do it again.
Awesome.
Probably.
I love that. My dad says something cool. Similarly, my dad also says, like, not about how many times you fall down. It's about how many times you get up. So I really love
that. It's true.
Yeah. And from the outside, you seem like someone who does not fall down. But you're saying even you feel like you've had moments.
Sure.
Yeah.
Everybody does.
Do you feel when you've had such huge success, like, do you feel that your goals continue to get higher? Or are you able to enjoy the big, you know, the highs that you experience?
I just like to work, you know.
Uh-huh.
I don't know whether I have goals at the moment. I sort of started singing again, which is why there's a microphone stand in here conveniently for you.
Yeah.
And you also have a lovely piano in the corner.
I do. It's rented.
Do you have an accompanist play for you?
I do. A great guy called Brad Ellis.
What are you singing right now? What's like, do you have a style that you prefer?
I've been singing sort of standards, really, and jazzing them a bit.
Do you have a couple of artists that you love?
Billie Holiday, Alec Guinness, one of my heroes.
Did you ever work with Alec Guinness?
No.
I definitely see how you were inspired by his work. Clearly, he was, you know, a giant performer, but it's cool to see. I could see how you were very directly inspired by him. That you can see it in your work, honestly.
Boy, I hope so.
Definitely. I love it.
There's a great story about him that he took some journalist out into the street in London and showed him how he could kind of disappear and not be recognized. And then they walked back up the street, and he walked back up the street as Alec Guinness, and people stopped him and said, "Mr. Guinness, I enjoyed all your movies." I don't think they made him a knight. He wasn't Sir Alec, I don't think. Should have been.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that the other day, because we don't know much about that here, the honor, you know, how it's decided. So I was talking with my wife about why Sir Paul McCartney is Sir Paul, but there's not Sir George Harrison or Sir Ringo. So you feel he should have been knighted? Are there any other people you feel should be knighted?
I don't think so. It's a very arcane thing. I don't know how it works in mysterious ways.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear it's not just me confused by it. I was going to ask you how it works, and then I realized I could just Google it and not bother you with a Wikipedia article I could read. But it is confusing. Like, why some people but not others? It's a very interesting thing. And wondering if we have any American equivalent of that.
Not really.
I guess we like view our Academy Awards as like being knighted when you were the best blank.
Yeah, yes. I don't think we're classy enough to have an equivalent.
Sure.
We're not. I should have asked you this at the beginning of the interview, but I want to know, what question is your least favorite to answer? And it's okay if we already asked it.
We will get up again.
We will, yeah, we will get up again.
There must be one.
Even if not irritating, like probably the one you get asked the most. Mm. It's like the reporter's go-to. Or podcasters.
I was interviewed once in New York by this lady from the New York Times, and I was rehearsing Amadeus, the play, and I'd just come from a costume fitting. And she said, "Do you feel you've been typecast by Frankenfurter?" I said, "Well, look at me. I'm wearing an 18th century coat and a wig. What do you think?"
You worked with it was Sir Ian McKellen was with you in that, correct?
Yeah.
Another sir.
That's wild.
It's true.
That's one of my Time Machine performances I would love to see, mm-hmm. is you two in Amadeus.
You can go to the Lincoln Center Library and ask to see.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They have a couple of scenes on tape.
Oh, gosh. Well, now we have to go.
Yeah, now I have to go. That's really exciting.
Do you have a favorite stage piece that you've done?
That would be it.
Would be the Amadeus.
Yeah. I'm jumping around a lot now, but I just thought to ask you, when you were filming Clue, how long did it take? Was it, because did you do it like a play where it
like scenes?
Yeah.
It's like, would you shoot like whole blocks because of the timing?
Yeah.
Well, Jonathan knew that it was very wordy, which was why he wanted to rehearse it like a play. And I think we all liked doing that. It helped because it was a bit, if you just looked at the script, it seemed like a long haul, and actually it wasn't.
So well paced and timed.
I mean, yeah.
It's just like a farce, just a classic farce.
It'll be a classic forever. Like, it's, it's better. It's better than, so much better than the board game, which it shares a name with.
Yeah. That's Mono's best review of that film. It's more engaging than the board game.
Oh, this has been just
wonderful, yeah.
Such a crazy honor. This is, I'm so, thank you so much for,
thank you for your time,
sitting down.
Oh
with
God,
us.
I'm so happy. I enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, well, good. Cause we will be back here once a month
without announcing ourselves.
A lot more questions about, yes. Weird questions.
Yes. We film at 3 a.m. So,
and even though it's a podcast,
we
will
film.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time. We really,
it's my pleasure.
It.
Thank you.
You're the greatest, greatest, undeniably actors of all time with the most iconic characters. They're always at the top of every list. And we are so grateful that we could thank you for that.
Yeah. Your influence.
Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, your influence will affect actors for just decades.
Decades.
If not centuries.
Unless further. The world ends in a year.
In that case, bye.
Bye. So thank you so much, Ms. Curry. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Anything
thank you.
Else, anything else you want to say to us before we bid you adieu?
Yeah.
Or, no, I'm very excited and moved to have been in a podcast. I was never quite sure what it was, but now I guess I know.
A couple of dummies talking at you for a while.
A couple of what?
Dummies yelling at you.
Oh, no, not at all.
Well, thank you
so much.
You're
thank
so
you.
Kind. For Horny for Horror, this is Mono.
I'm Adam. We love you, Betsy.
Love you, Betsy. Bye.
Bye.
What a great title.
Yes. Oh, thank you.
Yes.